Hello and welcome to Market Podcast. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen, and joining me as usual on the helm is Yohai Hilam. Hi, Yohai, how are you doing?
Hi, Lior, I'm doing great. All set for a new week.
All set for a new week, and you're also ready for the finals of the World Cup. You already have your bets set up for?
Yeah, I would like to see the 86 final, Germany against Argentina. But Brazil might make it, and so can Netherlands. So it'll be interesting semifinals this week. And once the markets are closed, we'll have the finals as well.
Yeah, okay. And finally, when the finals will conclude and the World Cup will conclude, probably the markets and the volatility will start to pick up again, and we'll see much more action in the markets.
Yeah, certainly. We all know that many traders are also football fans, and they have their noses glued to the television screens or streaming. It happens even in the United States, where soccer or football is not the most popular sport.
Even in the United States, wow, that's a high praise from you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay. So we have a busy schedule this week, and we want to start off with something that I've heard many people talk about in regards to when they want to do some investments in precious metals, gold, silver. Obviously, these kind of commodities have lost a little bit of their shine, so to speak, pardon the pun, because the metals haven't done well in the past couple of years. But even so, when people want to invest in gold or silver or other or similar commodities that they consider safe haven, and we'll sidetrack, and I won't go into a tangent, but I will say that I have some issue with referring to these metals as a precious metal, as a safe haven, but we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it
really
at that.
Safe.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that, and we'll pick it up in some other podcast. But when people come into and try to invest in these kind of options, what are their options? Let's put it this way. When they want to expand their portfolio to include these kind of metals, gold, I'm talking about obviously gold and silver. So the basic one, the most obvious one, is to just go buy some futures options, calls, puts, whatever you think wherever you think the market is heading. And the number one exchange place to do this kind of exchange is the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
CME.
Yes. And one of the problems, one of the difficulties and the challenges that people have to do with this kind of investment is that, for one thing, there's high maintenance margins, and they keep rising. The last time, I think it was last year, when the volatility of precious metals rose roughly around June, if I'm not mistaken, right about the time that
the taper tantrum.
Yeah, remember.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Big Bernanke started to make some more hawkish, a little bit hawkish tone in his speech, as in his FOMC meetings, and the volatility rose very sharply as precious metals declined, and the CME tried to taper this kind of volatility by raising margins. And it happened in the past as well when the markets heated up on the other way around. So this is one thing that people should be aware of, that margins could suddenly rise without any warning, especially when there's high volatility. And also, obviously, there's a position that you have to pay for it, and you won't see any return unless you hit the strike. So this is something that people should keep in mind. The other alternatives are investing in ETFs, such for gold is the most famous one, is the GLD, this is the biggest one, and for silver is the iShares Silver Trust. GLD currently holds 796 tons of gold, and this is the biggest ETF for gold in the world. There are others, but much smaller. For iShares Silver, they have over 10,000 tons of silver, so you can see that they are very substantial. ETFs, they're not going anywhere. The downside for using this kind of option is that there are management fees. For GLD is around 0.4%, and for iSilver is 0.5%. And obviously, you do get exposure to the precious metals. If they go up, the ETF follows it to the letter of the price of the precious metal. But on the other hand, you don't get any return unless only when you exit the ETF. So if there's if you go long on GLD and the price goes up, and obviously GLD will follow it, then you will see a return once you sell it. There's no dividends or stuff like that. And not only that, you also pay a fee for a management fee for using these kind of ETFs.
Just for holding it.
Yes, just for holding it. So there is that. The other alternatives for if people want to get a little bit of return along the way is stocks. And for stocks, there are two major groups. One group is the precious metal producers, and the other ones are the royalties and streaming companies. For the precious metal producers, you have the big names. You have Barrick, Pan American Silver, you have Goldcorp, Yamana. You have many, many options over there. The advantage is they do, most of them do provide a dividend along the way, so you do get a little bit of the money back as you invest, so you don't have to only wait until you sell the stock. But on the other hand, there is a lot of uncertainty because they have the management decisions that could impact the direction of the company. They have some of them, like Barrick, has high level of debt, so there's more uncertainty on that. There could be delays in producing metals. There could be rising prices of production in certain areas. So there are some uncertainties and some other issues that could reduce the price of these companies even more than the direction of gold and silver have an impact on these companies.
Right. So you're actually not dependent only on the price of gold, but also on the performance of the company, which can be better or can be worse.
Yes, exactly. The production, how if do you have any production growth, if they have any delays, like recently Barrick Gold has some issues with Pascal Lama. I'm sorry if I'm probably butchering this name, as usual. I'm sorry about that for my Argentinian / Chilean friends, because it's right on the border. This mine is right on the border, and it's still hemorrhaging money, and still there's no way. There are a lot of delays over there. So this issue also have a negative impact on the company's stock, and thus it could also reduce its valuation, even if the price of gold will rally, as it did in the past several weeks. So there is this kind of issue to recall, to consider. And the final one is royalty and streaming companies. When it comes to royalty, like Royal Gold, Silver Wheaton, the advantage is that they not only provide the dividend along the way, so you get to kick back some of your investment as you go along and invest in these companies.
Yeah, but some kind of yield. So.
Yes, exactly. So you get a little bit of a yield. But not only that, they also provide along the way some additional opportunities, because these companies, they only invest in precious metals producers, and they do so by providing a little bit of investment, and in return they get precious metals at a very low price over a very long period of time. So this is the royalty agreements that they usually have, and thus they have less exposure and less uncertainty when it comes to delays, when it comes to a rising cost of production. They don't have these kind of afflictions that they have to take into account. So it's a lot less, so there's less uncertainty in this type of business. Of course, there's still uncertainty when it comes to the price of precious metals, of course, but this is something that people who want to invest in precious metals have to take into account. So
yeah, but this option is a bit less risky or less uncertain. It's sort of the solid way of investment in gold.
Well, yes. If someone wants to invest in precious metals and for some reason believe that gold is overrated now. It's 1300, and that's, oh my God, that's too low. It should be 1900. If someone believes in that, then investments such as in Silver Wheaton, Royal Gold, these kind of companies, they provide the dividend along the way, and they will raise dividend as they go along and the prices go up. And at the same time, they also have a little bit less, they have less uncertainty than precious metal companies when it comes to investments in their mines and other sites, because they get a fixed amount of they get a royalty, basically. That's the whole idea. They get a royalty and they put the investment, and they don't have to take into account the delays or uncertainty when it comes to the sites or the streaming, the amount of streaming, or the amount of or the rising production costs. So they have a little less uncertainty from their business perspective. So these kind of things could also play a role when people try to invest in these types of companies. But again, it doesn't mean that just because they have these advantages, they are the best of the kind. There's still uncertainty. There could be some risk when it comes to management making such a good deal as the other one. And there is, of course, the uncertainty when it comes to the movement of precious metal prices and the realization of prices, what the price that the prevailing market price versus what they actually got for the price.
The actual deal.
Yes, the actual deal. So there's these two types of issues that take into account additional uncertainty. So these factors should also should be regarded when it comes to investment in in streaming companies. So to conclude, we have options, we have ETFs, gold and silver producers, and royalty and streaming companies. These are the basic four, and each one of them have the advantages, disadvantages.
Thanks for enlightening us. I never knew all the options of investing in gold. Just looked at the spot price, and that's it. And well,
all right. So moving back to what we have, what happened last week, and what's going on to happen this week. We want to kick off with what happened last week in regards to the big report. Was right before all our American friends went to their 4th of July celebrations, was the non-farm payroll report.
Well, non-farm payrolls report also consisted of lots of fireworks. I would say...
Pardon the pun.
Perhaps Americans now are eating more steaks than hot dogs.
Exactly.
In their barbecues. Well... Yeah, let's dive into the details. So, the United States reported a gain of 288,000 jobs in the month of June. This was significantly above expectations that stood on around 215, even above the, so to speak, whisper expectations, because expectations had risen in the days before the NFP because of the ADP report and other indicators, purchasing managers indices. But that was an excellent report. It also consisted of upwards revisions worth 29,000 in jobs revisions for May and April. So in April, we now had a gain of 304,000, which is also great news. And if we look at the bigger picture, it's the fifth consecutive month of gains above 200,000. It's the best 6 months of job gains. Best 6 months of job gains since 1998. That's 16 years. The unemployment rate fell once again. Okay, it fell from 6.3 to 6.1. Now, you may cast doubt about that number because it doesn't count discouraged people. The workforce numbers have been changed, the birth-death model. Well, the most important figure to look at when we have doubts about the unemployment rate, and we will have doubts for quite some time, is the participation rate. And that stayed stable at 62.8%.
Yeah, I saw that also. Yeah, I also saw that on the one hand, we saw a decline in number of unemployed persons to by 325,000. But at the same time, there was a rise in civilian labor force of 192,000. So it's not that the people have stopped looking for jobs, which is, as we always know, this is a factor that people sometimes gloss over, but it's a factor. But it's not only that, it's that it's still, we did show that there is a rise in civilian labor force this time, so it's not that all the people that were unemployed suddenly just drop off the labor force, but they also picked up and they came back to the labor force. This is, as you said, this is why the participation rate remained unchanged at 62.8%.
Yeah, so the numbers look good. In the bigger picture, we can also see, look at the employment to population ratio, which ticked up from 58.9 to 59%. That may not be a big difference, but this is a really wide indicator. And some small good news also from U6, the wider unemployment measure, also known as the real unemployment rate. It dropped from 12.2 to 12.1. It has been above 15% last year. So even if we look at the most dismal number, it has also been improving.
So basically, what are you saying, Hai? That the employment is doing actually better, and it's not we're not glossing over some obscure numbers that maybe will reveal that the employment is not that doing that well.
Yeah, this time it's not smokes and mirrors, but it does look like there's a real improvement in jobs. The only bad thing I see, which is significant, is that average hourly earnings they rose as expected by 0.2%, and they maintain an annual rise of around 2%. So that's okay, but it's not as good as the number of jobs gained. So the labor market is picking up, but these new jobs don't pay too much. So the big question we have ahead is the Fed, of course. We have a rhyme there. So the Fed has two mandates, employment and inflation. Now, employment is really picking up, so that might be a reason to raise the rate sooner. But inflation doesn't pick up. So we have fluctuations in food prices, and recently
oil prices, of course.
Oil prices due to Iraq, and food prices have risen due to droughts and various places. But the Fed tries to see through that and looks at core inflation. And when we talk about core inflation, we often refer to wages. So these haven't picked up yet. So the big question is this improvement in the number of jobs good enough to push the Fed to action sooner than later on the rates, or is the stagnant inflation a reason to be cautious for a long, long time and hold the rates low?
All right. In regards to the markets, obviously, for one thing, the employment report came out right before everybody were already picking up, putting their barbecue on their cars in the U.S. And so the markets were not too volatile. But was there any sharp reaction from the U.S. dollar and when the employment report came out?
Well, the initial reaction was a stronger dollar, but then we saw a divergence between various currencies. So the euro, which was hit by dovish Draghi at around the same time, it remained on the back foot and never recovered from that non-farm payrolls blow. The same happened with the Japanese yen. Dollar yen went up and didn't fall back down, because one of the reasons is that also U.S. bond yields rose together with the unemployment, with the non-farm payrolls. And as we know, there is a strong correlation between the NFP and between dollar yen and U.S. bond yields. So these are the weaker currencies. On the stronger side of the scale, we have the British pound. Good news has been pouring from the UK throughout the week, and even if on Thursday we had one minor slip in the services PMI, gave dollar pound dollar the reason to correct. So we had a weak services PMI and the non-farm payrolls. Pound dollar dropped, but it immediately recovered. Another strong currency is the Canadian dollar. It has been strengthening in the past 2-3 weeks. It's important to remember that while there is a correlation between oil prices and the loonie, the Canadian economy is influenced in a much stronger manner by its neighbor from the south. So if we have a pickup in the US economy, it's good for Canada and it's good for the Canadian dollar.
Yeah.
So we had the same knee-jerk reaction, a fall of the Canadian dollar, a jump in dollar CAD, but this reversed quite quickly. So at the end of the day, we have seen a stronger dollar, but not against all currencies.
Yeah, but maybe it's because of the, you know, the markets were kind of a numb due to the last week's activities in regards to the World Cup on the one hand. On the other hand, the U.S. is all going on vacation on Friday. Maybe we'll see some lingering effects earlier this week in the markets from this kind of a positive report.
Yeah. We're already seeing another weakening of the euro and another weakening of the, and now a fresh weakening of the pound, something we haven't seen last week. But I think the bigger effect will come especially Tuesday in the US morning. We have a release of the JOLTS report. It's the job openings report. It's for the month of May. Now you may look at it as a lagging report in comparison to the king of indicators, the non-farm payrolls. But it's important to know that Ben Bernanke talked about this figure and also Janet Yellen, and they see it as a wider, more important indicator of the labor market. Now, back in April, JOLTS jumped to 4.45 million from around 4 million. It was much better than expected, and we're expecting around 4.5 million now. So if we'll have, I think even if the number meets expectations but still remains on high ground, it could give the dollar another boost.
Oh, so you're saying that these two reports to get combined, the non-farm payroll plus the JOLTS, if both of them will be, one of them was obvious, was positive, so that's okay, but the other one could be very positive as well, and thus both of them could have some combined a stronger impact on the US dollar and the financial markets in the US in general.
I'm not sure about financial markets because an interest rate that would come sooner than later is not good for the stock markets, but it would be positive for the US dollar as it would.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned it because I was thinking about it also when it comes to gold and silver, and there seem to be like two different directions when it comes to the progress of the US economy. On the one hand, the economy is doing better, then people are taking more risk, invest more in equities, and the US dollar should strengthen. But on the other hand, you have the possibility that the FOMC will be more hawkish because the US economy is doing well, and thus will start to pick up rates, which could curb down the progress of the US economy, thus might slow down the risk taking and the progress of the financial markets.
Right. So these are conflicting issues. But we still have the tapering going on, and it'll go on until October. So if we'll have a negative effect from this on equity markets from the strengthening U.S. economy, I think we might be seeing it only really towards the end of the year when QE totally stops. I think everybody expects it to stop in October. There's a small chance it'll finish in December. So once this money isn't pumped anymore to the economy and all the focus shifts to the rate hike expectations, then we could see a negative effect on equity markets. But for the US dollar, every positive figure helps, and also analysts' expectations help. So fresh news from this morning is that Goldman Sachs brought forward its rate hike expectations. And now we know that sometimes Goldman is wrong and it's not always working towards the best interests of their clients.
They have several books on that. Goldman Sachs. The positive and the negative of Goldman Sachs.
So they began from a very dovish standpoint. They foresaw a rate hike coming only in 2016, in the first quarter of 2016, and now they brought it forward to the third quarter of 2015. Now Goldman is sort of more aligned with the market average, but they still noted that it's the first time since the financial crisis that they bring forward rate hike expectations instead of pushing them back. And Goldman does have an impact on markets. Of course, it's not alone. If we get more of these reports, these banknotes coming out, I think we can also see another positive shift in the US dollar.
All right. Okay, excellent. And turning off from the US economy to the British economy, you said that we have some very upcoming interesting reports in developments in the British economy, right?
Yeah, UK economy is steaming forward. Unemployment is falling. GDP is rising at a pace of 0.7, 0.8 quarter on quarter for the past year or so. So annual growth is above 3%. It's expected to continue doing so for a significant amount of time. Unemployment is falling. The initial forward guidance that Mark Carney, governor of the Bank of England, said was that they'll keep rates low until it falls below 7%. Unemployment rate in the UK is 6.6%.
So this week's Bank of England's monetary meeting, will there be any significant changes? Will they make any hints? Carney will make any hints, something, or it will just be...
Unfortunately, no.
It's just shaking in the smile pretty to the camera and do nothing. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, contrary to most central banks, the Bank of England does not release a detailed statement unless they change policy. So if it maintains, and everybody's expecting the BOE to maintain the interest rate at 0.5% as it has been in the past 5+ years, and to leave the QE program, called in the UK Asset Purchase Facility, at £375 billion, if it maintains the same policy, and it's expected to do so, no detailed statement will be released. So the real show, this BOE decision is basically a non-event. The big show is the release of the MPC meeting minutes in about 2 weeks' time. That's when we'll see if one of the members already voted for a rate hike. Carney does not want a rate hike, but he is accompanied by eight other members in the Monetary Policy Committee, MPC. And this will be a great show. But before that, we have more interesting news from the UK. Next week, we have the new jobs report. It's the claimant count change, which is jobless claims for June, and also the unemployment rate for May. We're expecting another drop in the number of unemployed, and another drop in the unemployment rate. So this could keep the pressure positive, keep the British pound quite bid. On the other hand, we have inflation, and inflation unexpectedly fell back down from 1.7 to 1.5%, and the BOE's target is 2%.
So the English economy is not doing much better, even with the very low interest rate, the asset purchase programs, and keeping the target low. It's still not doing much for heating up the British economy.
Yeah, the beginning, the recovery was concentrated in the housing sector, especially in London, in the southeast of England. So, I think it did spread to other areas such as manufacturing and various service sector areas. Similar, I think, to the United States, wages, I guess, outside the financial sector, the City of London, haven't risen too much, and that is keeping price rises a bit subdued. It's sort of the same story like in the US. So if we get no change in inflation or even another drop, that could push back interest rate hike expectations in the UK. But if we see it pick up once again, and together with another advance in employment, it'll put pressure on Carney to raise the rates. Currently, markets expect a rate hike towards the end of the year or the beginning of 2015. A rise in inflation could push these expectations, could bring them forward to around as early as October, fourth quarter, and that would supply fuel for another rally. But if we see another subdued report, it could be flipped back from 2014 to 2015. So I think employment is always a huge market mover in the UK, but the bigger focus is on this wild card of inflation. So that'll be the big event. It's next Tuesday.
Okay, so this could be a shift in the British pound, of course, and we'll have some ramification, some influence on the Bank of England's policy in the coming meetings. Very interesting. Okay, that's our show. Thank you. Hi, very inspiring, very interesting. We'll resume our podcast next week. If you like, you're more than welcome to subscribe. Put us a like on iTunes and other forums, and leave your comments below for keeping the conversation going. And that's it. Until next time, this is Lior. Sign off with Yochai. Telling you salute and have a good one.